Lauren, I'm an alcoholic. And tonight I get to introduce the first person that talked to me when I came back in this room about a year ago. I was shaking and freaking out, and she just came right up to me and was very happy and peppy. And she has been there for me every single day and sometimes multiple times a day for the last year, and has helped me so much, and I really appreciate her transparency. It helped me see that she was a real person, and that, you know, you all weren't like perfect robots like you looked like, and, you know, and maybe I could get this too. So I get to introduce my sponsor. Yay!
I'm Nikki. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Lauren. My sobriety date's July 27th of 2009. This group's my home group. And yeah, it's been really awesome to watch Lauren the last year. And I was sitting at the coffee table bitching about something, and Ian looked at me and said, "Look over there, that girl's shaking. Why don't you go talk to her?" And I was like, "Oh my God, I really don't want to." And I guess I was in a bad mood. I don't even remember. It was so trivial. But I remember going up to her, and she was shaking. And she's like, "I know you." And I was like, "You do?" She was like, "Yeah, 3 years ago I was in AA, and I met you." And I was like, "Oh, great. Cool. I'll talk to you after the meeting, you know, whatever." And it's been so great. I haven't had a willing sponsee like her in a long time. And I was in a really bad way when I met her. And I didn't have sponsees before her for like 6 months. I went like 6 or 8 months without a sponsee because of just the crap that I've been pulling in AA. And I didn't even want what I had at that time. But she was new enough to not really know better. And she asked me to sponsor her. And and it was just like a series of blessings after that point. And she's been way more help to me than I feel like I've been to her. And I don't know. When I don't want to do AA, my sponsees keep me accountable because it's based on them, you know, not me. And it's been really great, you know. So anyways, I am supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I really feel completely unqualified to be speaking in AA right now. I just feel really crappy, you know, and I've been talking to a lot of people, and apparently this is pretty normal for approaching 5 years. And I don't know that there's going to be a pop as much as there's just going to be like a huge level of humility that that I'm not really too familiar with. You know, like I feel really small in AA. And I think it's a really good thing. I've been walking around here thinking I know something for a long time, and I really don't, you know. There's a lot I do know about staying sober, but it's really hard to apply it. And I recently came into a period of time where I thought that I was going to graduate AA, and that I had done enough meetings, and I had done enough service, and my time here was ending. You know, and that wasn't a conscious thought, but that's what my actions were saying. And all my friends started to kind of disappear, and I was like, F them, you know what I mean? Like, I don't care. Like, this is me. This is who I am. And I don't know. Like, God really revealed to me what had happened in my life. And through a series of events, I lost my job, and I lost my car, and I'm battling with keeping my relationship together. And that's a really, like Tiffany said last night at the back porch, she was like, "That's a really great time for me to start changing." And that's exactly what happened, you know, and it was revealed to me like what my true behavior was looking like, and I started to change. It's been about a month since that huge epiphany, or maybe a little less time than that, but it's been really great, and I feel really close to God, even though I have very little materialistically. So I got sober at 19, and I did not plan on staying sober. Staying sober was not on the to-do list, and this seemed really gay to be here. And, you know, like not gay, like homosexual, but like gay, like crappy, like, you know, whatever. And Anyways, so I didn't want to get sober, and getting sober wasn't necessarily something that I had a choice in. My whole family's in AA, my whole immediate family, a lot of my extended family, and I don't know, like they've all been sober since I was born, except my brother. And so I've never seen them take a drink. I never experienced active alcoholism in my home, but I did experience dry drunks and what that looks like, which is sometimes worse than active alcoholism. But so I knew about AA before I was even ready to be here. And I didn't necessarily start drinking very young. I was afraid of alcohol. I was afraid to drink to the point of needing to be in AA. Or becoming an alcoholic or a drug addict or, you know, whatever my parents had been. They met in AA, you know, at like 1 and 2 years sober, and then we were born, you know, me and my brother. So that's a scary thought, to have children. But I don't want kids for that reason. But I don't know. When I took my first drink, I want to say that I was like in between 8th and 9th grade. I was like 13 or whatever. And the first time I touched alcohol was Bacardi Silver. And I didn't know that you were supposed to mix it with something. Like Bacardi Silver is really bad on its own. And I spit it out like immediately. Like it touched my mouth and I spit it out. And my friend, I remember, she swallowed it. And I was like, oh my God, how could you have swallowed that? Like that was disgusting. And I remember, like, wanting to be cool and drink alcohol before I even knew, like, what it could do for me. I remember being jealous that she swallowed that alcohol and that she got drunk that night. And I think I, like, pretended to get drunk. I think I, like, got myself a glass and, like, poured some of it out when she wasn't looking and, like, pretended to act drunk. And I don't know. My friends were much more willing to participate in getting drunk than I was. I was so afraid to, like, break the rules, or I was afraid to become an alcoholic. I don't know. Like, I just lived in a lot of fear, and breaking the rules wasn't necessarily something that came easy for me. But eventually, it became normal to break the rules, and I remember at one point I was drinking with my friend in 10th grade in the bathroom right before first period, and we had Everclear, and I didn't know what Everclear was, and I remember, like, this is very typical for me. I drink, I feel the effect, and then I call my mom, and I need to go home, or whatever. And my mom, if you know me, I'm on the phone with my mom a lot, with I don't feel well, or, you know, whatever. She's not a nurse either, I don't know. Like, she thinks she is, maybe. But, so I get drunk in the bathroom, and it's really early in the morning, you know, and so, like, it was really bad, and I don't like to get sick, and I did. And I remember going home and missing biology, and I just told my mom that I was ill and not drinking or whatever, and she bought it. But most of the time I got caught, and, you know, because she's an alcoholic and a drug addict, and so she kind of knows what that stuff looks like. And my mom was not above, like, jails or police involvement. You know, like, she had been through this with my brother, and he was starting to get sober at that point. So any type of violence, any type of illegal substances, like, we called the police, and I went to jail, you know, kiddie jail. And so I did that a lot. And eventually I started to smoke pot, and that was better because it didn't make me sick, and I could still, like, drive, sort of. I drove better high than I did drunk, and at least by my own standard, I don't know. And smoking weed was fun. I just got hungry, and then I fell asleep, and there wasn't really this, like, calling mom escapade necessary. And I don't know, I had friends that had parents that didn't care, and that's kind of where it went down. And it was just like a series of experiments in high school. I did not start drinking on a regular basis until college. And even then, I was so afraid. Like, my drinking career was maybe 3 years. Like, not long at all. And it went downhill so quickly. Like, a lot more quickly than I would have wanted. You know, like, I get here and I listen to you guys talk, and it's like 10 or 20 years, or even in this group, like, 5 or 7 years or 10 years of drinking, and it's like, God, like, I miss so many opportunities. Like, like, I was afraid of a lot of drugs, and I was afraid of a lot of alcohol. Like, I didn't want to overconsume, which is silly to even say as an alcoholic, but, like, the fear of, like, getting sick and the fear of getting in trouble really prohibited me from engaging in a lot of behavior. But either way, I was brought down to my knees. And to me, like, this stuff is, like, in my head and, like, in my heart. And, like, if I don't have a way out of myself, thank you, I'm not okay. You know, and I remember consciously when I figured out that, like, because I suffer from anxiety, when I figured out, which makes no sense, that pot helped my anxiety, which it totally didn't, but, like, I thought it did, and because it makes you paranoid. But I remember connecting those dots and like, wishing that I had done that my whole life. And I, like, I wanted to be messed up all the time. And it was just, like, an accident. Like, it happened on accident where I got messed up twice in one weekend. And it was just, like, two different people, two different hangouts, and I really loved it. Like, my whole weekend was gone in, like, an instant. Like, I barely remembered it. And I was like, my weekend should look like that all the time. And so that's what I shot for. And then in college, you were able to, like, pick your own classes. And so I picked all my classes to be on 2 days a week. So I had 2 days of school and 5 days of weekend. And so 5 days a week, like, I was getting messed up as possible. And eventually the lines started to blur, and it really didn't matter in the end, like, if I had school or if I had work or if I had to be at my mom's, you know what I mean? Like, it started to not matter, and I started to make exceptions here and there with that stuff. And I started to feel really bad. It, like, ate me alive that I wasn't present for people and that, like, I couldn't show up for the school that was really expensive, you know, for my family. And, like, I don't know. Like, I wish that I had done more drugs. When I got into AA and, like, I heard some stories, I ended up relapsing on a drug I'd never tried. And I was like, why didn't I do that the entire time I was drinking? It was, like, Xanax, and I lost, like, a couple of days. And, like, I wish that I had gotten to that level, because the guilt and the remorse and the crap that I carried around with me when I was drinking was so hard to block out, you know. And I guess that's why I didn't last long, you know. And so, whatever. I came to my first AA meeting at 18, and I called my brother, and he had, like, 2 years sober at the time. And he took me to 33, and that was May 25th of 09. And there were, like, a lot of young people there, and I, like, met all his friends, and, like, Bilodeau had some time at the time, and I met him, and that was kind of funny. And they were, like, breakdancing in the foyer of his room and in the house, and Ronnie was still around and everything, and so they were all hanging out. And I met Marie and Sarah, and this, I think Sarah's gone now, but I met them. And so they took me to that meeting, and I lasted, like, 5 days. And I don't know, like, if I didn't understand what I was supposed to do, but I just, like, white-knuckled it, I guess, for 5 days. And I wasn't really too interested in making friends here. Most of the people I met were not young enough to be part of my clique of people. The only social skill I had at the time was, do you get high? And if you said yes, then we could hang out. And if you didn't, I really had very little to say to you, you know, because when you're high, you don't really have to say much. Like, the high is, like, the activity, and then you just stare at each other for a little while. I don't know. And get some food, like, at the gas station, you know, like, that's the activity. And so my social skills were very, very minimal. And I was very mean. Like, I was very intolerable, and I was tolerated here. I remember Katie was my first sponsor, and she told me to be at this meeting, like, an hour and a half early, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous. And, like, I had to, like, help set up the meeting or whatever, and that was really annoying, and I, like, didn't talk to anybody. And if you did say something to me, like, the only thing I could, like, muster was, like, sup. And then I would, like, awkwardly walk away. Like, I just didn't have any desire or any ability to communicate with other people. But it really didn't matter. You know, like I would lay in the front row because she made me sit in the front row. It was horrible. And I would like lay in the front row, ignoring everyone before the meeting started, and like read, you know, whatever, my big book or whatever I had. And people would come up and talk to me, and like it was annoying. Like I obviously don't want to talk. Like I'm laying in the meeting. That's not a signal for help. But it absolutely was. If somebody's laying in the meeting, I'm going to walk up to you. And so whatever, like, I came against my own desire. And I'm not sure why I listened to her, but she told me that I couldn't hang out with anybody that I like, went out and changed my sobriety date with. Because, like, I didn't really have a series of relapses, but I just, like, kept going out and changing my sobriety date. And so anytime I hung out with somebody and we got messed up together, they were off the table. And so, like, one by one, I'm eliminating, like, my old life. And the last time I like, relapsed, I had, like, 58 days. And I found Red Door, which was great because they let me share. And most meetings shut me down. I remember going to, like, the 10 at 33 when it was still happening, and Stan was the chair. And I would, like, raise my hand and open my mouth before he even called on me, and he's like, we'll get with you after the meeting. And I would get so upset. Like, I wanted to talk about what happened that day or whatever. And so, whatever, I found Red Door, and that was really cool. And it was, like, this huge wine fest. And I remember James Maloney used to wear this hat that said YPG, and I was like, what's YPG? Like, and, you know, like, whatever. Like, it was, like, an interesting group of people. And, I don't know, like, they kind of let me spill my guts, and that's what that meeting's good for, I guess. But you could smoke in that meeting, and that was really cool. I would smoke, like, an entire pack of cigarettes during the course of the meeting when I was new, and now I have limitations. I only smoke at the 12, 3, 6, and 9. That's it. If you miss it, you don't get to smoke. I'll smoke an entire pack of cigarettes. So, anyways, so I found Red Door, and that was really cool, and I had the 58 days, and I was kind of happy. I was kind of happy in AA, and I thought that this was going to be somewhat decent. I think I, like, made a friend, and, like, she and I had similar sobriety dates or whatever. Like, I found a road dog, and Katie was becoming more tolerable to me, like, the idea of a sponsor. And so, whatever, I hang out with this guy that I went to high school with, and he absolutely, like, got high. And I think, like, he was high at the time. And I didn't know that prior to asking him to hang out. But as soon as I realized it, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be fine. Like, I have almost 60 days. Like, I'm not a newcomer anymore. Like, I could probably hang out. Like, I'm spiritually fit. Like, I had read that part in the book or whatever, and, like, that was my big thing at meetings. Like, you are spiritually fit if you say so, you know, whatever. And so I deemed by myself that I was spiritually fit to handle the situation of hanging out with someone that actually was high at the time. And I was on, like, step 3, maybe. I had never gotten past 4 with Katie. And I started to make amends to this guy. And, like, I wasn't there. And I don't even know that I really owed him an amends, but I did anyway. And I made this amends to him. And he's, like, I was like, okay, is there anything I can do to make this right? Like, I think it was something trivial, like, in high school. I, like, bailed on him. I don't even know. And he was like, yeah, there is something you can do to make it right. You can come back to my house with me. And I was like, okay. So whatever. I go back to his house. Because my mom is, like, really excited. She thinks this kid's sober. You know, and she's like, I'm so glad you're hanging out with sober people, blah, blah, blah. So she lets me go. And I'm surrounded by people I went to high school with. And, like, they're all, like, getting high together. And, like, I was in shock. You know what I mean? But I had to play it cool because, like, I was a big geek in high school. Like, I had, like, one friend. And, like, that was it. And, like, it changed year to year. And so, whatever, I'm sitting around these people, and I'm, like, so anxious and so nervous, and I want to look cool, so I start talking about AA. And I'm, like, I have this big book, and I have this 30-day coin, and I'm going to get 60 in 2 days if I stay sober by the grace of God. And, like, you know, whatever. And I'm, like, telling them all about AA. And this kid next to me is having trouble rolling this blunt. And I was really good at that. And so he like put a hole in it or something. And I fixed it. I was like, I'll fix it for you. It's not a big deal. I won't even smoke any because I'm sober. So I fixed this blunt and I taste this paper, and like it was almost like I hadn't been in AA anymore. And like they were very confused because the second I tasted this paper, I was like, you know what? Like I think I'm just gonna pick up a white chip tomorrow. And I'm going to get high tonight with you guys because, like, it's almost my birthday. And I have to celebrate somewhere. Or I think my birthday had just passed and I was, like, complaining that it was really crappy. But anyways, so I get high. And I was really confused. I was really confused with why that happened. Because up until that point, I really thought I liked AA. And I thought that, like, I was doing really well. And thank you. And I don't know, like I was so confused. Like I wanted to be sober and it didn't matter and I got high anyway. And so I went to Red Door that night and told everybody about it. And I like met this girl, well I already had known her, and she was at this meeting and I really freaking hated her. And she was like way too into AA and she told me to like wear better, like wear more clothing and like stop showing my tongue ring in public and like stop cursing in meetings and like stuff like that. And she would always say stuff like that to me. And so I tried to keep away from her because I wasn't interested in changing my behavior. And so she was there and it was really late and she doesn't even smoke and she was at Red Door, so I have no idea why she was there, but she was there. And somehow she was my sponsor by the end of this conversation that we had. And I needed her. I needed her so bad. And it's not that, like, Katie didn't try to, like, change my behavior, but I was so afraid of Lindsay that, like, I would have done anything to not, like, have her look at me that way or, like, yell at me. I don't know. But she didn't, like, really yell at me. She just talked really down at me if I, like, whatever. Doesn't matter. The fear of my sponsor created this desire for me to change. And that was the beginning. That was how it began for me. And eventually, like, obviously, like, she helped me gain a relationship with God that made me want to change internally and want it for myself and not be undignified or promiscuous or obnoxious, you know, or intolerable, which, like, still happens, but, like, there's plenty of, like, feeling inside now with connection to God that like I want these things to change and I want to continue to grow. And the desire to drink did not leave me for a while. Like I would like want to go out all the time because before it was like 2 weeks stay sober, 2 weeks go out, like I would give up very easily. And each time it was a choice. Like I made choices to give up rather than pick up the phone or go to a meeting or whatever. And now it was like I had this extra gift or this extra tool that was God that was going to keep me here. And I prayed on my knees to a God I didn't believe in, what felt like praying to the sheets, for him to remove the obsession to drink. And that was the only thing that was different between all the other times. And I stayed sober. And I was so surprised. Like, I was like, that's crazy that that even worked because I don't even believe in God. Like, I didn't necessarily, like, think that there was no God. I just didn't think I would have a relationship with him. And so, whatever, my relationship with God, like, continued to grow. And after, like, the drink was removed, I started to change, like, inside and out. And my first year was, like, totally crazy. We went to a lot of dances, and we went to, like, a lot of different parts of the state. And I went to Ficky Paw, which was really fun. And I thought, like, at the dance at Ficky Paw that, like, I would never see those people again. So, like, I acted really crazy, and I did a lot of stuff that, like, I would never have wanted to do had I known I'd see them again. And then I stayed sober and, like, saw them. And I still am living down my first year of Ficky Paw. And, like, you know, whatever. So act as if you're going to stay. You know, I don't know. So, but I had a lot of fun, and I started to make friends despite myself, and I started to sponsor others when I was, like, 4 months sober, which was really crazy. I was through my steps really fast, And I really didn't feel very qualified, but like most of the time I don't feel qualified. I don't really think it matters. Like if my sponsor says I can sponsor, then great, I'll sponsor. Nobody wanted me like to sponsor them, but like, you know, whatever. And so I only have like a minute, but like I said, lately it's been really rough, and I'm really grateful for the pain. It's so easy to feel good and stop and feel good and give up what got you there. And I stopped praying, and I stopped reaching my hand out, and I stopped participating in meetings. I was still here, but my etiquette was so bad. I was on my phone the entire time. I would get up. I would talk to my friends. So I might as well have not even been here, you know. Not that you should leave if that's what you're doing, because you should stay, absolutely. But for me, I wasn't getting any spiritual benefit from being here. And so it's been a really humbling adjustment, you know, and I like tally my meeting etiquette right now. Like, don't get up, don't check my phone, don't talk to your friends, like, check, check, check. Like, somebody has to check it off for me because I'll lie and like not be honest. But it's been really cool to feel new again. But be willing to change and willing to grow and just be honest about it. So, I'm really proud of Lauren, and she has seen me through a lot of what I've seen her through, and I feel like we grow together a lot, and I guess that's all I got, so thanks.